This program is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Located at 185 Worcester Street, right on Route 9, they can be reached at 508-545-8105 or at wickedchronicvendorcommerce.com. Wicked Chronic is a boutique-style retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products such as Wiccan, cannabis cultures coming together in a unique setting. You need something for that special spell? Go on down to Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts and speak to Beverly. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. Check them out today.
Friday the 13th. Expect the worst.
Victims were marked with star-shaped brands.
The cursed badge turns an ex-cop into a killer.
I can get away with murder.
Now he's above the law.
Where is he?
And he's out for revenge. If you think this is just another crime story, you're dead wrong. It's an all-new episode of Friday the 13th, the series. You'll be starstruck with terror. Next week.
Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, the podcast dedicated to all the canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre. And I'm your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Miss Rosenica.
And the music you're listening to behind us is John Hammer's original Miami Vice theme song, which is very appropriate considering how everyone looked like they were out of an episode of Miami Vice in this episode.
Oh my god, this cop drama is completely... encompasses this episode, and I don't know, it's so set in the 80s that Miami Vice is actually pretty appropriate for this episode.
Yeah,
not only because of the actors that are in it as well.
But everyone dresses like they stepped off the set of like a cop show or Miami Vice. Everyone was just, I mean, this episode couldn't have been more 80s if they tried. And I know the show is set in the 80s, but it doesn't always feel like it, you know?
No. And in fact, like, the main bad guy on this episode was actually in Miami Vice.
Yes, he was. I was able to look that up online. We'll get to that in a minute on the IMDb page. But this episode also has the longest opening intro before we get to our main characters at 9 minutes and 32 seconds.
Yeah, we're doing this whole, like, mobster theme for this episode.
It's a bit ridiculous. Mr. Zetica has the episode synopsis for us.
Okay, Badge of Honor, originally aired July 5th, 1988. A police officer uses a deadly sheriff's badge to seek revenge against a mob boss for the murder of his wife.
Dun, dun, dun. Now, one of the bad guys in the episode, David Provell, was that the actor you were talking about that was on Miami Vice?
Yes,
okay.
David Provell. Like, you immediately see him and it's like, I know that guy from somewhere.
Well, he plays mafioso tough guys all the time, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he was on The Sopranos, he was Richie April, and he's still working to this very day. He's got a bunch of, looks like probably independent films and such, but...
He's either on one side of the law or the other.
Yeah,
like in Miami Vice, he was Detective Louis Gallo.
Mm-hmm.
But then he plays like mob people, like in Sopranos, and I mean, he was in The West Wing. Like, he has done so many cop dramas, and he's either a sleazy bad guy or maybe even a sleazy cop, you know. But yeah, very much a Italian-American stereotyped character, actor.
Yeah, or he's playing a thug, like in, if you've ever seen Weird Al Yankovic's UHF.
Yes.
He plays the head thug in that movie.
Yeah, I always remember him because Weird Al Yankovic takes the stapler and staples towards his direction, and he has to pull these staples out of his face. It's hilarious.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he's actually got some more movies coming up this year, too. Cabaret Maxim as Mr. Gus.
Yeah, I mentioned Papa. The, yeah, some again, a lot of looks like direct-to-DVD kind of, you know, low-budget stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm glad he's still working because, you know, he's actually a pretty good actor.
Definitely, absolutely. So the episode opens up with the first time we're seeing police presence in the show, by the way. The police have almost zero presence when it comes to anything on the show.
Oh, yeah, even for crimes that are actually committed inside the antique store, you never really see the cops.
No, and there's a huge police presence because we have the police shootout in the very beginning, and then, you know, this cop has to clean out his desk and locker. Very, very police procedural because he messed up. And
yeah, this Detective Russ Sharko.
Yes, our unfortunate hapless loser character.
Oh, wait, let me tell you something. I saw this Sharko guy, and immediately the first thing that came to my mind was Chris Farley, because he wears this plaid suit, mm-hmm. You know, this white with these plaid stripes. It's like a 70s-ish style suit, and it's supposed to be the 80s. And just the look that he has, this overall look, you know, he's got about 40, 50 pounds more on his body, and he's got the balding head with the glasses, and he looks like as if Chris Farley would do Da Bears. Yeah, it was like so losery the entire episode.
This actor has had a long career going all the way back to 1953, and he was in the Magnificent Seven. He was in The Defenders, not the Netflix show that stars Daredevil. He was on The Fugitive for a few episodes. He was in the original Amityville Horror.
Mm.
He was on a TV series called Mannix, which I know a lot of people remember. He was on. He had a guest appearance on The Odd Couple, and he was on Renegade. And he was in Cobra as well, the Sylvester Stallone movie. And then he passed away in 2009, at the age of 85.
Okay, all right. This episode, I think, you know, Russ Sharko, the detective, is trying to be this super cop and getting these mob guys and the mob boss, and yet he bumbles every single time. It's actually a little frustrating to watch him do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this whole episode seemed to be. It's like 80s, a lot of sad sax and synthesizer music. Almost overwhelmingly, the saxophones just pipe in at these odd times during the episode. And then you have, like, cocaine and colored lights and the big shoulder pads and the outfits are completely 80s. This is a stereotype of the 80s, just like you said. I mean, it is absolutely, if you were to take the worst parts of the 80s and just mash them all together, this would be it.
There was a cartoon series that was on, I believe, Comedy Central. I don't know if it went more than a season, but it was something another. It was like set in the 80s. I think Ray Liotta was the main character in this like kind of parody cop show. It was on at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night because of the, you know, type of humor.
Oh, I think that's called like a Moonbeam something or other.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
We might cover it one day because it got canceled.
Moonbeam City.
Yes. Did it get canceled, though?
I'm not sure. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Oh, it's kind of a parody of, like, the Miami Vice stuff, but done in the 80s. Artistic style that was kind of very popular at the time.
Exactly. And it was a very unique kind of animation, too. It was cell animation, you know, 2D, but not, you know, not quite like Archer or South Park.
Yeah. But kind of Archer-like in the way that the main cop character handles things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just kind of does what he does on his own and doesn't much care for the opinions of the rest of his coworkers.
All right, we're definitely going to get to the part of this episode that I absolutely hate right off the bat, is that the MacGuffin of this episode, the thing, the object, the cursed antique, has the stupidest curse of all time. You burn people with the badge and then electrocute them, makes them go into like some type of seizure. What?
Yeah, it just kills them, and it leaves this very the badge of the star badge burn on them, like a calling card.
And then
you don't really get anything out of it.
No, and I'm jumping way too far in the notes, but I need to point out a couple of the stupidest things I've ever heard about like how this badge is connected to like Jesse James in a way, or it's like Jesse James was a bank robber. He had nothing to do with Law and Order.
No, not at all.
But they mentioned, like, oh, this guy used the badge, and he thought he was Jesse James. And I'm like, aren't there dead lawmen of history that are famous, like Wyatt Earp, you could have said the badge which was connected to, maybe? Why Jesse James? Did Jesse James kill a lot of lawmen?
I mean, I think he did. I didn't look up Jesse James's record because it seemed like just a throwaway line.
Yeah, I mean, they mentioned a couple other people, or one other person that in the history of, like, of the West or something, which had nothing to do with the badge, and I'm like, what?
Most of the actual sheriff's badges range in the points of the stars, so just to have the sheriff and the 5 points was actually kind of a little rare. Most of them had 6 points or had a circle around the star, because they were trying to imitate it's a derivative of different types of shields and badges and iconography at the time. So, 6-pointed stars are much easier to cut out of tin, and tin is the material that most of these badges were made out of. I don't know. This whole object, since it just seems that they have to kill, you know, it just kills the person, it doesn't make the body disappear or anything.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing with the gun.
Yeah, why wasn't like a...
You wouldn't have to get that close.
Yeah, but, okay, so what's the curse exactly?
The badge kills them and then it reappears in your hand.
The badge kills the cursed antiques kill everybody, but they always have, like, a reason why they have to do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
This
makes
no sense. This is why I wish Elise had been able to come on. Elise Wax, the author of Curious Goods, the Guide to the Friday the 13th TV series, will return in 2 weeks for the season finale of the Friday the 13th coverage of on the Dead TV podcast. So maybe we can bring it back. I'll bring it up to her then, because I'm just like, what?
Well, she does mention in her book that this was her least favorite episode out of the entire series, because she's not a big cop drama fan. This episode is just so way off base, because you don't really feel anything for our main character. You know, this Detective Sharko, you don't really feel for him.
Yeah. The only thing I could put down in my notes is that I think the badge makes people into, like, a badass, maybe? Because this guy is like the, what's his name? The red stapler guy from The Office more.
I believe you have my stapler.
Yeah, yeah. That guy. That's who he reminds me of, mostly.
He is very illusory.
What's the name of Mickey's newest conquest?
Tim Ayers.
Tim Ayers, okay, yeah. So Tim Ayers, played by John Stockwell, who I couldn't find if he has any relation to Dean Stockwell, who was on Quantum Leap, was in Christine, Blue Crush, Top Gun, Into the Blue. So he had a long career playing, like, a hunky guy character.
And it's immediately upon his entry into the scene, she just gets wet. Oh, my God.
Oh,
she's all over him.
Exactly. He did, by the way, go on to do become, like, a director. He acts and still indirects, but yeah, he's a kind of a television show director. Did SEAL Team 6, The Raid on Osama Bin Laden TV movie, Kickboxer Revenge, and a bunch of other stuff I've never heard of. He directed 4 episodes of The L Word, which I did watch, which is a Showtime lesbian television show.
Oh, good on him. Yeah. Take the jump from actor to director. That's awesome.
Yeah. Mickey is, by the way, the only character on the show who seems to ever get laid.
Well, you know, Ryan tried that once.
Well, yeah, with the what? With the Puritan girl?
No, the girl that he dated after that.
Oh, the girl
in the
who
next
died.
Episode,
yeah,
that
okay,
actually
yeah.
dies. Yeah.
And then I guess Jack got it on with his ex fiance, right?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but Mickey seems to be mainly the one who seems to be bringing home the bacon.
Yeah, and with the saxophone in the background. you know, they kind of collapse on the bed, and I thought to myself, man, did this episode just turn into the Red Shoe Diaries?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And she's always wearing, like, the half-open robes and stuff.
Yeah.
Wait, he is a cop, right, Tim?
Yeah, Tim, yes.
Yeah,
we find out at the very end he's actually working for the FBI.
Yes, that's okay. So he's not a cop. He's a federal agent.
Yes. Although, why he couldn't tell her that, then that's kind of a mystery because, you know, there's no real reason to hide it from her. She's not going to spill the beans to the mobsters.
Another episode without Jack.
Yes. He is away.
He's getting other objects.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this episode that it's just like mobster talk and counterfeit money. That, you know, this whole episode is about the mobster dealings and counterfeit money, and Tim is trying to sell the mobster Victor Hass, kind of like the avocado Hass, this counterfeit money and trying to negotiate a good price for it. And I think it's trying to set him up as like the sting operation, but we don't really find out about that till the end. And there's a lot of death in this episode. Oh my God.
And of course, and there's a lot of cocaine too. Wow, I've never seen this. I think the first episode we've seen this much drug use before.
Yeah, like you know, it right there in front of you. You know, the line is cut, and the Victor Hass actually just, you know, does some cocaine right with Tim. Like, wow. All right, you're gonna go there Friday the 13th. Okay. Another thing that I noticed from this episode is that the inside of the antique store, the way they filmed it, it's almost like the inside is so dusty that it looks foggy indoors. And, you know, usually the antique store has a little bit of that kind of haze in the air, but this episode really went overboard with it. It was almost obscuring the actors a little bit until the camera moved a little closer, and then you could see the actors and they're playing their roles. But it's like very foggy. The light source was coming in from, you know, the outside or whatnot, and I think it was trying to get that like old grittiness to it,
mm-hmm.
But it just kind of obscured what I was trying to see.
It didn't. It did feel like a lot of shows that were shot in the 80s at this time, or even movies that were kind of low budget, would use that effect greatly. I remember that being in a lot of horror movies, like Fright Night Part 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, come to think of it, yeah. Yeah, anyway. Another thing that's in this episode, which we get to find out a little bit later, is that Detective Sharko, after he has been suspended and then, you know, fired from his job, he talks to his wife, which we come to find out in a dream sequence, exploded in a fire when she started her car. So it's one of those stereotypical gangster setups where you turn the key, boom, the car explodes. And she's in this oxygen tent on the bed. We don't see her, we don't hear from her, nothing happens. And then by about middle of the episode to three quarters of the episode, I was starting to question whether there was anyone in there, because he never seemed to like take care of her other needs, like bathrooms or lifting her up or turning her or anything.
Yeah, she didn't respond in any way. So I was wondering what it was, and then sure enough, we find out that it's a very Norman Bates kind of situation.
The corpse in the bed, you know, just now a mummified skull and, you know, maybe a little bit of body there, but yeah, she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of crazy.
One of the other actors in this episode, it was this very the actor who plays Solly, Solly.
Uh huh.
He's still working today, but went on to become like a stunt coordinator in a ton of things, such as RoboCop Prime Directives, Doc, the Andromeda Strain miniseries that was on a few years ago, Resident Evil, Arrow, the television series that, you know, the kind of connected to Constantine, DC's Legends of Tomorrow. He's been the stunt coordinator on a lot of these shows.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I don't know if we want to go through some of the entire plot of this show, because this episode is just, there's a lot of things going on that don't really make sense. People that the Detective Sharko kills for no reason, like his favorite informant, he kills for no reason, and, you know, All in all, there's 10 dead bodies in this episode.
I saw that. I saw the count of the 10 bodies, and I was just like, holy crap, and they're all from the badge.
Well, not all. There's one officer and one mobster in the very first scene that gets shot.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they shoot each other.
And then Tim and Sharko and those two get shot, but Victor Hass gets the badge on him, so they die at the very end of the episode.
Yeah, there's not a lot to this episode in terms of, like, a massive amount of material to talk about. It's pretty straightforward in what happens, even though the badge of honor and what it does makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, there's really no honor in there.
It's also gonna be the smallest object that they've captured so far.
I guess so. The scalpel was pretty small, but the badge does fit into the palm of your hand.
Yeah, the scalpel was small, but I think the badge is even smaller. So even if we have a pen in another episode, unless we come up with a ring, the badge will be the smallest antique that they've captured so far. And you gotta think about it this way. If Ryan and Mickey did nothing at all, would the badge have just ended back up
in a police precinct evidence locker?
Correct, or someplace else, because they honestly have little to do with how the badge moves around.
True. You know, Detective Sharko finds it, and then he discovers that it has power.
I mean, they go to the doctor to recapture the badge, but...
At the very end of the episode, I do want to note that Ryan admits that he was jealous of Tim. And that there was competition struggles there. And the final line of the episode is where Mickey says, "Well, you're pretty good to me." You know, so there's a little bit of interplay there. But, you know, Ryan was kind of jealous of Tim, you know, macking all up on Mickey.
Ew. It's your cover.
I know.
And again, I mean, in the next episode, Pipe Dream, he mentions again, oh, this is Aunt Carol's daughter.
Cousin Catherine's daughter.
Aunt Catherine?
Cousin Catherine's daughter.
Cousin Catherine's daughter. Just...
The family line on this family is a little hard to track down.
Exactly. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about this episode. There's not a lot. It was not my favorite alongside the...
It doesn't really seem like it's a true Friday the 13th episode.
No.
You know, Jack's not there. It's so, so freaking 80s. It's ridiculous. And that saxophone going the entire episode. Oh, my God. But, yeah, it's an episode.
Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back with Pipe Dream here on the Dead TV Podcast on the Radio Horror Network.
Hi, I'm Ali, and this is Rob.
Howdy.
And we're the hosts of Horror Never Sleeps, a new weekly horror movie retrospective podcast. We will be reviewing your favourite scary movies like Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and Psycho.
Also, we'll be covering classic gems like Maniac Cop, The Lost Boys,
The Human Centipede.
Whoa. No.
Oh, we'll see. First episode will be released mid-November. You can listen on iTunes or your favourite podcast app.
Until then, stay scared. Ooh.
Yeah, we won't be doing that.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca.
We're the hosts of a new true crime podcast called Yours in Murder.
We put out a new episode every week. We switch between covering true crime cases together and analyzing true crimes in our minisodes.
We take turns on the minisodes, focusing on our unique perspectives.
I have a degree in forensic science.
And I have one in journalism.
So we're able to go beyond Wikipedia and dive into the facts of the case. We look at the forensic evidence and the spin put on cases by the media.
Check us out on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and like us on Facebook for an update on today in true crime history.
As always, we are Yours in Murder.
Take cover from terror on Friday the 13th.
It's just the beginning.
Two top-secret weapons, one the invention of man.
No!
The other a demonic instrument of death.
Help me!
Learn too much, and you could be next.
What did you see?
There's nowhere to hide. On Friday the 13th, the series.
Please don't!
Next week, make a date with death.
And we're back with the Dead TV Podcast with the episode...
Pipe Dream,
where we learn a little bit about Ryan's past. And Mr. Zeneca has the episode synopsis for us.
All right. So Pipe Dream originally aired July 11th, 1988. A frustrated dreamer turns to the supernatural to achieve success, using an ornate pipe to eliminate anyone who gets in his way.
What's funny is that we get more into Ryan's past, but we don't. We have still yet to get very much into Mickey's past.
Yeah, no, I really, really love this episode. Yeah, this episode was focused entirely on Ryan's past and his relationship with his father, and it felt real. I really did enjoy this episode, and we so far have only seen from Mickey that she has, you know, ex-lovers out there, and... You know, she had an ex-fiance. She has gone through a little bit of stuff, but it's really not mentioned so much. Ryan and his interplay with his father, which turns out to be the holder of the cursed object, that seemed just like the dialogue, the attitudes, the male struggle between wanting to show caring and compassion and not really understanding how to do it, and... You know, not talking to a family member for years and years. I mean, this was a great episode. We start out at the Inventor Seminar, and our cursed object holder is referred to by the name Ray, just his first name, and he pulls out this pipe that has a devil's head on it. Very, very ornate pipe. Devil's head. It looks creepy. It looks evil. And he just, like, casually pulls it out and says, oh, I've never lit this thing before. And then let's talk about your invention, you know, this guy named Keith. And he finds that this is a new laser-guided missile launcher, but it's handheld and it's very powerful. And then he just lights the pipe in the room. And he's shocked by what it does because he's never lit this thing before. But it... You know, the smoke surrounds the person, coughs, and then skin lesions and, you know, kind of boils come up, and then poof, the body's gone.
It another outcome of the cursed object doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay, so you puff on the pipe, and then the person, like, melts to death, and then they die. I mean, I thought maybe the secondhand smoke would, like... just kind of kill them, but they kind of went over dramatic with, like, how the cursed object can
kill
the skin
somebody. Bubbling and stuff like that. A good effect for the time. And then you don't have a body, so you don't have to dispose of it, like, in Badge of Honor, where the body remains. At least there's that little bit of protection where you're actually killing someone, but there's no evidence.
Again, I don't think it's the best use of, like, how the cursed object could be used.
Yeah, if there was some sort of guarantee that if you puffed on the pipe, you got rid of your enemy, the person that you were pining over their item, and then the pipe gave you some sort of boon, some sort of protection from detection, you know, other than just like the body has disappeared, I think that would be a better trade-off.
Definitely. I don't know. Maybe you could, like, hypnotize somebody with the smoke. I'm not really sure. I just, like, what could you do with a cursed object besides making them... It's a cloud that follows people around and tries to kill them.
Yeah, I don't know. And the whole name of the episode, Pipe Dream. I mean, pipe dreams, that's a term that relates to opium smoking, where if you go to an opium den... The opium is so powerful that the morphine content is actually very high, so you kind of sink into your, you know, bed or lounger, and you have these vivid dreams, and these could be like fantasies or imaginings. And while Ray, who is 54 years old, you know, Ryan's father, while Ray has these dreams of being some sort of success, some sort of big shot somehow, he never quite... accomplishes it until he uses this pipe, but it doesn't seem to hold up that same type of opium dream scenario. Opium dreams are kind of fleeting, but they cause the user to enjoy them in the moment, and they know that they're not real. Whereas this is something that he is pining over his entire life. He finally found an invention that he could pretty much steal, and it's leading to his dreams, but it's not making him happy.
And we don't learn that this is Ryan's father until Ryan gets the invitation in the mail from his future mother-in-law, or stepmother,
yes.
Rather. Sorry, stepmother.
Yeah, his future stepmother, Connie, sends him the invite because she says that it's a long time that they kind of got over this animosity towards each other. And, that was that moment of, like, he opens the door, it's the person that holds a cursed object, and you're like, whoa!
Probably because this is a lot of what happens in the episode is tied to, a lot of what happens to, what happened to Ryan's father and him, his relationship, is tied into the death of his brother.
Yeah, and it's such a sad thing, you know, that the death of his brother kind of broke them up, and his father could never accept Ryan for being the artist that he is.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a lot of dialogue having to go back and forth about what is Ryan's status within his father's life and vice versa. And they have this moment of breakthrough towards the end of the episode that's very touching. Like, the father finally sees Ryan for being a man instead of a little boy, because of the knowledge that Ryan has saved Jack's life and Jack has saved Ryan's life. But also, is this the first episode where they kind of spill the beans that they retrieve cursed objects?
I believe so. They don't tell almost, I think, anybody that that's what they do, especially to anyone that they've been dating, other than, what was Mickey's fiance's name?
With an L. I'd have to look it up. It's in my notes here somewhere.
That guy.
He was kind of a douchebag.
Yeah, well, she told it to him. By the way, so Ryan's father, his name is Michael Constantine.
I saw that when it came up. I'm like, oh, Constantine.
And he's best known for playing Gus Portocalaculus. I probably mispronounced the last name, but he plays Grandpa Gus in My Big Fat Greek Wedding and My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 and My Big Fat Greek Life, the TV series that only lasted one season.
Yeah, he looks familiar. I didn't quite know where, though.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding was like the highest grossing independent movie of all time, beating the Blair Witch Project, which had come out in 1999. And then My Big Fat Greek Wedding held the record for a number of years until just a few years ago.
Yeah, and we also find out in this episode that Uncle Lewis basically was Ray's mentor.
Yeah, you know, there's a big connection to Uncle Lewis here. Usually none of the people have any connection to Uncle Lewis at all, but obviously... excuse me, him being Ryan's father, there would be that huge connection. I was kind of curious. I was wondering if they were brothers, maybe, but no.
Yeah, there's a bit of an age problem here, because when Ray says that when he was 4 years old, he got this cut on his neck, blood everywhere. Uncle Lewis put this thing on his neck, and the blood disappeared. The cut healed like it was never there. It was like magic. Now, Ray says that he is 54 years old, and Uncle Lewis has only been dead for less than a year.
Correct.
So the devil, I think, might have made Uncle Lewis age slowly, because Uncle Lewis wasn't, you know, 80. He was maybe in his late 60s at most.
Yeah, I mean, just different writers for different episodes, of course. Excuse me.
Yeah, but it was like, if Ray's father died and Uncle Lewis kind of took over the mentorship of Ray, there would be at least a 30-year difference. You know, maybe at minimum 20 years.
True. This episode was written by Mark Scott Zierce, who would write episodes of Star Trek Voyagers, Sliders, Space Command, Mantis, which is one of my favorite 90s television shows that I hope maybe we will do one day. And he wrote four episodes of the real Ghostbusters animated series and Friday the 13th.
Awesome!
He also wrote, by the way, you're never going to believe this, he wrote 63 episodes of The Smurfs.
The Smurfs? Really?
Yeah, he is credited as a story writer for 63 episodes of The Smurfs.
Wow.
Also wrote episodes of Super Friends, The Incredible Hulk, and He-Man, and The Masters of the Universe.
Now, I just want to touch on the Smurf thing. It's like, you wrote 63 episodes,
of
and yet...
Of a Smurfing Good Time. I mean, we all grew up with the Smurfs, but I still can't believe... I mean, you're right, it is a bit unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how are you going to get ideas for 63 episodes of the Smurfs? Because they're all smurfing our life. And then the storyboarding for 63 episodes of the Smurfs, that's just confounding me at the moment.
A little bit.
Let's do a Smurf episode on Handy this week. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it was a little bit unbelievable. But again, I always love a guy who was behind one of my favorite 80s cartoons of all time growing up, which was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Did you ever watch that?
He-Man. Oh, yeah. My brother had the entire playset.
Oh, he did? Like all the different toys and everything? That's pretty awesome.
Yep, yep. In Grayskull Castle and folded out and had the elevator in it. Yeah.
Let's bask in the glory of the He-Man theme song for a second. Tonight. Gotta love that 80s soundtrack to He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh, totally, totally. Takes me back.
Yes, definitely. Also, this is the first episode that we have to deal with, like, a major kind of gun thing. You would have thought the MacGuffin, or the antique object, would have been, like, the, you know, maybe something to do with guns, but it's this...
No, the gun is just a cool invention.
But it's this, like, devil's pipe thing, and, like, I don't know if they were trying to emulate the fact that big 80s action movies were a big thing right now with, like, Commando and, you know, Schwarzenegger and Stallone... You know, Chuck Norris and stuff like that. You know, people, Dolph Lundgren. You know, pumping out these 80 big burly men action big gun films. So they had to make an episode with like a big gun. I don't know.
I don't know why they chose the guns for this episode. I mean, it is pretty damn cool. You know, but the invention could have been really anything. They didn't do a lot with the importance of the gun until the end, where on the big day of the presentation, Ray has this tussle with Jack, stuns him, and then puts him behind the target for one of these, you know, in the shooting range.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only danger that comes out, you know, having to do with the gun. So the invention could have really been anything. As long as there was some element where it could potentially hurt someone somehow, and then you'd still be able to accomplish the same type of plot device. But it was pretty darn cool, I have to say, though.
This Ryan's dad is presented as a devil-smoking, NRA-loving family man, because, let's face it, this is just like a giant episode for the NRA.
Well, I mean, there's no bullets so much as some sort of tank, carbon dioxide tanked powered missile. Yeah, I don't know. They don't really show the ammo so much, because the ammo is like this little square box, which is different than like bullets in a cartridge.
No, this is something you'd see in a video game, or at least in an arcade attached to a arcade machine.
Yeah, you point the laser at something, and then the missile just fires and hits it with 100% accuracy over a half mile. Can a laser actually travel a half mile?
we think, of course, this episode is going to have gearing towards a happy ending with the whole wedding being set up and everything and people getting ready for the wedding of Ryan's father and future stepmother, who you have to kind of be curious about, like, how the hell did she end up with a guy like this?
You know, you get old, you know, you try to find comfort in things. There must have been a lot of redeeming qualities about Ray before he started getting paranoid and a little schizophrenic after using the pipe. And then he has to try to cover up his tracks because there's proof that he actually stole the designs for the gun. You know, once he knows that someone knows that he didn't design the gun, he starts getting a little crackpot and starts killing people.
So what you're saying is before he went nuts. Crazy. Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Wonkers.
Yeah. I mean, you can fall in love with a lovable loser that can't really rub two dimes together, as Ryan mentions in this episode. So there was something redeeming qualities, like his ambition. Ryan says that he learned his ability to discern right from wrong from him, and he always looked up to his dad, but the sadness about it was that he never could quite measure up to his dad's specifications. He could never be like a manly man like his dad, and his dad just admits that he doesn't really know what he's doing.
Yeah, he is definitely looking for daddy's acceptance in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that's a touching part about the entire thing. And if I may, read a passage from Elise's book.
Sure.
Quote, "I was very proud of the script. It had so many moments of genuine connection between Ryan and his father. And the thing of wanting to be there for each other, being disappointed in each other, loving each other, hoping to communicate with each other. I could identify with what Ryan was doing in the show, and I could understand the corners the father had cut. Because he was a little man who wanted to be a big man, wanted to be a hero to his family. But what he was doing was causing great harm to the world. It's not that you start a monster, but it's where you end up, because of those small compromises you make that ultimately become big compromises. This is what I was writing about in Pipe Dream." So that's the quote from writer Mark Zickery. It's just an excellent quote.
I also understand where Ryan gets his screaming, out of control, like, you know, just kind of goes ballistic scream from, like he's done in several episodes, because Ryan's dad grabs Mickey at one point and, like, kind of like hauls, you know, the way he does it and the way he screams at her is very similar to the way Ryan has screamed in previous episodes, like most recently in the Puritan episode when he went banging on the door of the woman who had the cursed object.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was a nice touch, you know, having those points where the father kind of emulates what we've been seeing from Ryan all this time. You know, so Jack is actually warned about this pipe through Mickey, because she really feels that something is up here. She's not seen the pipe. Ryan is kind of covering up and making excuses for his father. And she calls Jack, and Jack says, well, yeah, there's a pipe, but it doesn't have a sell-by date, you know, what doesn't have an owner, but it could have been a gift. And they start looking for it. And I don't know why they would do this, but he schedules the big meeting with the, I think they're Italians from for this new invention, on the same day as his wedding. So, you know, as Ryan says, we're a family that loves stress. So he has to go straight from the house to go to the presentation, and then from the presentation to his wedding. And the dad is just kind of spiraling out of control. And instead of focusing in on one thing and focusing in on the presentation and just letting the pipe go, he chases after Mickey and tries to kill her with the pipe.
And then Ryan, like, grabs the gun and goes chasing after his father again, doing that kind of Ryan scream overacting bit, which I would love to have John DeLemay on the show. I've talked to him on Facebook, and I mean, he accepted my friend request on Facebook, but we haven't really had any, like, great communication yet, so I don't know if he's just really busy or what it is, but I would love to ask him, what was with the Ryan scream every time it happened? Why was his this dramatic overacting, like throwing your body around and screaming out the person's name that you're going after.
I don't know. We've got a lot of time that we're going to be doing the Friday the 13th series, so hopefully he'll be able to answer that question at some point in the future.
Yeah, it would be great to be able to connect with him. Again, it sucks that Chris Wiggins died a year ago. I wish I had known... I wish I had, like, tried more to try and reach out to him in the last 10 years I've been doing Radio of Horror. Because, like I said, back in 2008, I had Louise Roby on the show. And her interview with my interview with her was archived on her site for a long time until it's kind of a dead link now, so I don't know what happened to it. But someone had sent me saying, hey, I heard about your show due to Louise Roby's interview, and this was like a year or two ago, and I was like, wow, really? That's on her site? She's like, yeah. It's like the only interview on her site. I was like, what? So,
wow.
But I went there, and it's like, it's dead. The link doesn't work or whatever. So I'm like, I wonder if her site maintenance is just not being kept up to speed. So, somebody else I hope to try and reach out to and connect to, because I found her through MySpace back in the old MySpace days back in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she's been a little silent lately. So.
Yeah, wondering if she's retiring or if there's something else going on. Who knows? Just hopefully all is okay, because she's had... no social media interaction with anybody.
Yeah. People have things that happen and life happens.
That's
fine,
and she's entitled to her privacy. I just hope all is well.
Hoping everything is going well for her, yeah.
10 years ago, it was easy to reach her, and all of a sudden, it's impossible. So it kind of makes you question what's going on.
There's a comment that I believe Jack actually says regarding... growing old and being the type of age that Ryan's father was. He says that it's a narrow ledge over a long, dark drop.
Exactly.
And that finding success, the opportunities are not laid out before you, but become fewer and fewer. That's kind of sad, but true.
It also... in the episode, which, again, I thought this was a Jack-less episode, but he shows up halfway through it, he points out how much, he feels about Ryan almost to the point that Jack is a better father than Ryan's own father is.
Yeah. But in the end, Ryan's father saves him from that cloud of smoke that, he released.
After Ryan saves Mickey and then Ryan's going to kill himself to save Mickey, Ryan's dad sacrifices himself, breaking the curse.
Yes.
Which, again, it's like, don't become friends or try and date or be a relative of Ryan DeLion because you're going to die. Ryan's track record is horrible.
That's his Friday's curse.
Basically, you got to ask the question, are they cursed themselves because they're around the cursed objects? Is it like a virus that it kind of siphons off to them, so anyone that they're connected to, anyone they care about, dies, except for Lloyd. Lloyd was the name of Mickey Roby's,
the ex-fiance
of Mickey. I said Mickey Roby, but Louise Roby's character Mickey. Anyway, so that he's still alive. Lloyd is still alive out there somewhere.
Yes, and he knows what they do, and he doesn't really believe it, so...
No, but yeah, you're right. This is the first time they ever kind of talked about it with somebody. It was kind of interesting when she was like, oh, she's like, who's that? Oh, that's Uncle Lewis, and I'm like, dun-dun-dun. So it'd be cool if they do more episodes in the future, coming up into season two, obviously, because we only have two episodes left, if they have more connections to Uncle Lewis, because Uncle Lewis has been alive so long, so he probably touched a lot of other people, family members and stuff like that. So it'd be interesting, maybe, like, Uncle Lewis has a kid, Uncle Lewis has an ex-wife or something.
Well, we know that Uncle Lewis doesn't have a kid because there was no next of kin, as mentioned in the first episode, The Inheritance.
That's right. Mrs. Zeneca, you being a woman, you would know you have a child, but a man that may have...
Men could have illegitimate children in places, but...
So, who knows? I don't remember, as I know very little about... remember very little about season 3, but I don't remember an upcoming episode we have a potentially other next of kin pops up. Maybe tries to take the... not by force, but maybe wants to inherit the store, and maybe they have to make a decision. about whether or not they should. Maybe it's time for them. They've done so much. Maybe it's time to hand it off to someone else.
I don't know.
We'll see.
We definitely shall see. We've got two more episodes on this season before we move over to Spawn.
Technically,
and I am full term with my baby, so you know we're keeping an eye out for that.
But hold on, technically we only have 1.5 episodes because one of the two final episodes in 2 weeks is a clip show.
Yeah, the last one, the season finale.
A clip show. It's like what, maybe 20 minutes of actual real footage.
But they do actually have some occult stuff in there.
Oh.
That gets me excited.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it with Elise Wax because she's going to come back on the show. And then, yes, in a couple weeks after that, sometime in April, we'll be covering Spawn, the animated series, for the next several weeks. So we'll be covering the first 3 episodes. So there'll be a short episode of the Dead TV Podcast. It'll be about 45 minutes long, about 15 minutes per episode, as the Spawn animated episodes were only about 25 minutes apiece. So,
yeah,
it was a cartoon. So, well, again, that's pretty much it. We have, Ryan's in shock. Not a happy ending. That's how it ends. Closing credits are on the cursed object. Very cool looking pipe. I don't own any badges, as I'm not in law enforcement, and I'm not a smoker, so I don't own a pipe. Do you own a pipe, Mr. Zetica?
Okay, all right. Well, for badges, I don't personally own one, but my husband does, and it's not a sheriff's badge, but it does say brothel inspector.
Wait, your ex-husband or your fiancé? Your ex-husband or your fiancé?
Well, my fiancé, I call him my fiancé or my husband or my partner, it's kind of interchangeable there.
Gotcha.
But it's a brothel inspector badge, which was actually a thing in the Old West, so that's kind of hilarious. And pipes, I've got a wide variety of different pipes for different things, mainly because the aesthetic of a pipe is kind of a cool thing. And like vanilla pipe tobacco, I really enjoy the smell of. I don't smoke tobacco. But I do like the aesthetic. So, like the Gandalf long pipe, I have one of those, and I like to bring it out when I watch Lord of the Rings.
Gotcha. Okay. I see. Of course, you can't do any of that right now, being pregnant.
No.
Well, that's pretty much it for the Dead TV Podcast for this week. Again, we'll be back in 2 weeks, and you can find out all the other information, all our previous episodes on Radio of Horror. If you've been noticing there have been episodes missing on the iTunes channel for the Dead TV Podcast, it's mainly because the amount of episodes that can premiere in syndication, which is what they call the other sites that display your podcast, they call it syndicated. That would be iTunes, Google Play, Podfantatic, which is another site that I'm on for Supernatural Creatures and Lore, which Dead TV Podcast will be on soon. There were several episodes missing from the very beginning of the show, but only because I didn't set the settings to include in syndication more than just 30 episodes. So as we kept recording an episode and posting it, an episode kept getting deleted. So that got fixed. So all the episodes will now be on iTunes once again. And you can find all the episodes anyway on RadioHorror.com, and you can find us on Twitter at ChristySAV.
Or at ElegantlyKinky.
And also on the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page, which you can leave a comment or send us an email. And don't forget, there's also a Dead TV Podcast connected to the Radio Horror Show Patreon. You can make a donation there. We will send you a great prize. Become a sustaining member of the Radio Horror Show Patreon to help the show out with all its expenses.
If you want to send us some fan mail or some hate mail, we love to read both of them and laugh.
Yes, we will have some fan mail to read in about a few weeks when we premiere Spawn, the animated series. Something I haven't gotten to in a little while, but I do have some comments and a couple emails to read on the podcast, and we will plug you there. Also, if you happen to have a business and you'd like to become part of the Dead TV Podcast and sponsor the show and have your show plugged on the Dead TV Podcast, let us know. It could be a website, it could be a physical business. Let us know, like Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Once again, thank you, everybody. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.